The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. In a minute, we're going to jump into the fray here, talking about the future of healthcare. How do you get healthcare for all in America? That's the question. And we'll have different ideas about that coming up. But first, there's one clear idea we have to have, is to get you home safe. So let's turn this over to WEAA Traffic. We'll be right back. Mark Steiner, and welcome. The issue of healthcare reform, more specifically how to ensure that every American has healthcare, is a battle that's being fought on Capitol Hill. It's something that's been fought about and legislated on here in Maryland for many years. The end of that is not near, it seems, but for the first time, it seems that something may actually move on Capitol Hill, may actually move even in the halls of Annapolis. But what will that system be? How do you ensure every American with health care? How do you ensure that the cost will not skyrocket and become more than can be affordable for any society? So we'll talk about that this hour. We're not going to have a raging right-left battle, because it gets really boring after a while, but we are going to talk about with two men who are deeply involved in this issue, have slightly different versions of how we should reform healthcare in America and in Maryland, and talk about that. We did invite the insurance industry here at the last minute. The people from AHIP called and said that they could not join us by phone from Washington, D.C., but we will be talking to Kevin Zeese and Vinnie DeMarco in just a moment. Before we get into that discussion and debate, I want you to bring on for a few minutes Dr. Margaret Flowers, and I feel like I could use a doctor right now. I'm sorry, she's not in the house. Who is a co-chair of the Maryland Branch of Physicians for National Healthcare Program. She was here last because she and a number of other single-payer advocates were arrested in Congress trying to have their voice heard, and it turns out now that the single-payer voice will be heard in front of Congress, and the first person to testify will be Dr. Margaret Flowers. So we've asked her to join us just to talk about what's going to come up on Thursday and how that came to be. Margaret, welcome. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me back.
Always. So tell us what's going on Thursday and how this it's gone from being hauled out of a congressional hearing, arrested, to testifying before them.
Yeah, it's been an amazing month. So I guess Max Baucus, Senator Baucus, who was is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee where we were arrested, did say finally, after receiving a lot of public pressure, that he would meet with single-payer advocates. And so he did meet last week with five single-payer advocates. And while he said things were a little bit too far along in the Finance Committee, he did say things were starting to move in the HELP Committee, which is Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. So a delegation of us from the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare met with the staff of the HELP Committee last Friday and requested that we be able to participate in upcoming hearings. And so I was invited last night to testify this coming Thursday at their first healthcare hearing in the HELP Committee.
And what do you expect to come of that?
Well, I think the reason that's very important is that we haven't been able to do that in the Senate until now. And by testifying, our comments, my comments, will go on the record as part of the congressional record. And that is significant.
So for those of you who believe that single payer is the only system that will work in America, what happens next? Then now that your voice is at the table, how deeply does that involvement go in the debate, do you think?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because they seem to be really heading down this particular path, which we see as really not being a solution at all, and actually adding more cost and continuing more of the same problems, which I'm sure Kevin will discuss with you. But these are important inroads, and we also, if you may not be aware, that there's going to actually be a hearing on the merits of single payer in the committee in the House, in the Education and Labor Committee, and that's on Wednesday morning, and that's specifically on single payer. So these are, you know, two kind of significant steps that have happened this week.
I think that's coming really significant. What we'll plan to do is over the next couple of weeks, follow that very carefully, continue our discussion on healthcare, on the healthcare system, and the future of it. have you back on for a full hour. We just thought this hour, when the health insurance industry decided not to come, and having two of you in the studio and Vinny, since of different ideas, was to keep it balanced here. So, but Margaret, thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to hearing about the testimony on Thursday.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Can I just say that the public pressure is really important, and so we do need to keep pushing for more hearings. This is just a start, but we need more hearings in the House and Senate.
Absolutely. Margaret Flowers, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Take care. Bye.
Margaret Flowers, take care, is a physician, a pediatrician. She's co-chair of the Maryland branch of Physicians for National Healthcare Programs. She'll be testifying before the Senate on Thursday. Joining me in the studio now, Vincent DeMarco is director of the Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition and has been fighting for healthcare reform in the state of Maryland for at least 10 years, if not more. He's been a guest on my show many times over those 10 years as he seeks to find a way to make sure that every person in Maryland, and his belief system is every person in America, should have health care, that it's a right. And Vinny, welcome. Good to have you back with us here.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
Always good to see you. And Kevin Zeese is back with us once again as well.
Good to see you, Mark.
Good to see you. Kevin Zeese is director of ProsperityAgenda.us, and Kevin has been a leading force in the battle for single-payer health care in Maryland and in America, and is also one of those that was arrested at the
Senate Finance
Committee hearings, and was on the show right after that happened as we talked to those who were arrested. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. Your thoughts on the healthcare reform, write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. This is the debate in America, I think, is getting to a very interesting place. I think that in some ways, the healthcare industry itself, the insurance industry, feels like it's reeling a little bit. Like it doesn't quite have its legs under it like it always did, because the pressure is on from a number of points, and the pressure is on from both your perspectives, and the pressure is on from the White House. So talk about where you think all this is now. Let me start with Vinny DeMarco. What do you think we are in this debate right now? And then we'll turn to Kevin.
Well, Mark, again, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Always good
with
to see
Kevin.
You.
Yes, appreciate it. You know, it's interesting. In 2005, just a few short years ago, the prospects for significant health care reform in Maryland and nationally were just about zero, were nil. Then two very important things happened, the elections of 2006 and 2008. Those two elections changed things completely, both in Maryland and nationally. With the election of Governor Martin O'Malley in 2006, Maryland went from really going nowhere on health care. We went from 44th in the country to 21st, a major step forward. And since July 1, 2008, over 40,000 lower-income people have gotten health care. This is tremendous progress in many, many ways. So Maryland's moved ahead. In 2008, of course, President Obama was elected, and he made expanding health care a top priority. And already, Mark, before we even talk about comprehensive health care reform, the Obama administration has made significant progress. They enacted into a law the expanded state children's health insurance program, which will expand health care to an additional 4 million children. This is something, of course, President Bush vetoed twice. So that was enacted immediately within the first month of President Obama taking over. We've already expanded health care tremendously. In addition, the stimulus package that was passed early in the Obama administration provides billions of dollars to states, including, of course, Maryland, to help make the Medicaid expansions that we've enacted work. We've already done a lot more than happened in the first 8 years, in the 8 years of Bush or in the 4 years of Ehrlich. This has been tremendous progress. I want to start with your listeners understanding that we've already done a lot. But there is a lot more to do. And I commend both Governor O'Malley and President Obama for keeping committed to the goal of quality, affordable health care for everyone. And President Obama made it clear just again in the last week that he's fully engaged and we're going to make it happen. And I believe that what's going to come out of Congress is going to be something that's going to help achieve health care for all. And then, but I think it's going to be something that states are going to have to help make happen, to help implement, to help make it happen. And we in Maryland are prepared to do that. Under the leadership of Governor O'Malley and Speaker Bush and others in the legislature, Chairman Hammond, others, we are ready to do whatever has to be done next. So I think what Marylanders and Americans need to understand is over the last couple of years, since these two just very important elections, we have expanded health care to thousands of people in Maryland and millions of people all around the country, and we are poised to achieve making quality of health care affordable for everyone. And I could talk to you about our specific proposal if you'd like, but the important thing to understand is we've done a lot so far, and there's more we're going
to
do.
No, I think that your specific proposal is important to hear. I want to hear what Kevin has to say, and then I want to hear that because in some ways it might mirror some people are working on Capitol Hill,
yes.
And I want to put that on the table so we can talk about it. Kevin?
Yeah, I think where we're at right now is a key moment in the debate on health care in the Congress. There's a lot of flourish in the early part of the Obama administration about health care for all, universal coverage. But it was always obvious from the beginning he was not confronting the real issue. And the real issue is the health insurance industry. And I'm sorry, the health insurance industry representative is not here to discuss it because I was looking forward to that. But
me too.
The health insurance industry is really causing a lot of the problems we see in healthcare. It's a very complex system with 1,300 to 1,500 private insurance companies all seeking to make a profit, all creating bureaucracy within their own agencies, but also for everybody else. Hospitals have more billing agents than nurses, often one billing agent per bed in a hospital. Doctors are spending 20% of their overhead on dealing with the insurance mess. Businesses have to deal with the insurance administration and the mess that goes with that. Individuals, we have to all deal with the insurance companies to get permission to go to see the specialist. We have to get call and complain to fight to get covered, and no pre-existing illness, all that nonsense. And so, we've had a lot of time of really failed health care. And sadly, what I see happening in the Congress right now is not going to solve the problem. They're advocating a multi-payer system. That means the for-profit insurance industry, a multi-payer system that's been tried in half dozen states and has not succeeded. And what I mean by not succeeded is it has not controlled costs. It has not resulted in universal coverage. We need to confront the real root cause problem. And if we don't do that, we're just going to keep spinning our wheels. What this will end up being is a gigantic subsidy for the insurance industry, a massive taxpayer handoff through various mechanisms. And what we're seeing coming out of Baucus's committee is very slow regulation happening, 10 years from now. You've seen this idea of a public option as an insurance choice faltering. Robert Reich had an excellent article in the last week or so describing how the insurance industry has already gamed that to make sure it doesn't work, and have several options on how to do that. And so that's not a real solution. You've got to confront the root issue, and the root issue is the health insurance industry, and that's not being confronted.
So, Vinny.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to hear what your plan is, and I know that what you've done, as opposed to where Kevin and others who are working for single payer have been doing, is you've been building this kind of trying to build a coalition that includes insurers and includes businesses and unions. So just talk about that. I'm lay your approach on the table.
Well, we have our organization was formed in 1999. Dr. Peter Bjelanson, former Baltimore City Health Commissioner, now Howard Health Commissioner, got us going with the goal of quality, affordable health care for all Marylanders. And
right.
We've been working on that, and we have been trying to make gains as we can. This is a difficult issue, and there are a lot of moving parts. And especially before the 2006 election, it was hard to achieve health care for all. And again, we have made progress. That's helped a lot of people. But we also took some time to listen carefully to the people of Maryland. We did polling and we did town meetings. We met with business groups, labor groups, individuals, and we found through our polling and through meeting and talking to thousands and thousands of Marylanders, overwhelming support for quality, affordable health care for all. But people don't want to be all on one health insurance plan. They made that clear to us from the beginning. They don't want to be taken off the plan they have and put on one plan with everyone. What they want is something that allows them to keep their plan, to be more affordable, to control insurance company excesses, and to make sure everybody's covered. So we went to the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, University of Maryland, and said, okay, help us put together a plan that makes quality, affordable health care available, affordable for everyone, and does it in a way that makes sure everyone's covered. So we spent years putting that plan together, listening to the people of Maryland, and we announced a plan on November 12th, 2008, which I think achieves this goal. And I think it achieves some of the goals that Kevin was talking about of making sure we don't have insurance company excesses, but it also allows people to stay on the plans they have, which people want to have. And one of the things that we emphasize is we work together, we can achieve this. And we have recently very excited about the support for our plan from the Greater Baltimore Black Chamber of Commerce, the Prince George's Black Chamber of Commerce, and the Anne Arundel County Black Chamber of Commerce, all endorsed our plan and said that we want to achieve health care for all. Now, I can describe it for you, and what you'll see is a plan that makes sense for all Marylanders. And there are a lot of similarities between what we're proposing and what President Obama and Senator Baucus and Senator Kennedy are proposing.
Well, let me come right back to you so you can really detail the plan, and I want Kevin to be able to kind of parse through it and you two talk about what's wrong with it. And Kevin, I mean, jump in. One of the things that a poll that I recently read from the Kaiser Foundation said, and then we're going to open the phones, by the way, at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about single payer, your thoughts about universal health care coverage, controlling health care costs, how do we get there? Robert from Baltimore County is the first caller up. We're going to come to you just as soon as we lay these arguments out, and you'll be part of this discussion and debate as well. But a Kaiser Foundation poll that I was looking at just this afternoon said single payer, what Vinny was saying, has kind of a narrow majority of 49% to 47% in this country. But when you ask people, do they want a fully competitive public option to throw into the mix of healthcare insurance, that number jumps to 67%. So at some form that comes in, and so respond to what Vinny was saying and how what I just said fits into that mix for you.
Well, there are lots of polls that are out there.
I know there are polls and there are polls.
There really are, and you can find lots of polls that support single payer. You can even find polls that show a plurality support for socialized medicine with that kind of language. And you can find polls of doctors that show 60% support for single payer. I think the things that really changed in the last since the Hillary effort in the early 90s, the things that really changed have been doctors have really moved very strongly into the single-payer side of things. They have dealt with the insurance industry and seen the problems that it causes. More and more doctors in Maryland are just giving up on insurance, in fact. The insurance company comes and says, this is the price we'll pay. The doctor says, forget it. I'm not going to be part of your system.
They saw these little boutique practices of their own.
And they just forget. They don't want to be part of the insurance industry. Right. Doctors are changing. Nurses are getting stronger on our side. The public is getting more aware. The problem with the public option is it's undefined. What is it going to be? And as I mentioned, they're already trying to game it. They're already trying to put restrictions on it to prevent it from really being a challenge to the insurance industry. So we'll see if it works. But the problem with the public option, even if it is a good one, is it does not deal with the main issue. All that bureaucracy. You're still going to have all that bureaucracy of the hospitals with billing agents rather than nurses. That's not going to change. And so you're not confronting the root cause issue. I think the public is more with us. We've been actually very surprised to see the reaction when we did the arrest, which was out of total frustration. I don't pursue arrest as a strategy for advocacy as my top choice. I can tell you that. Even it's not my way of doing things. I prefer to put the facts out, argue, and lobby.
You're not going to jail if you can help it.
I choose not to go to jail if I can help it. So it was not a first choice. But we did it out of frustration because Senator Baucus has made it very clear he would not consider our side of the story. Even though we win on every measure, cost controls, we can really control costs, and I think everyone agrees with that. Coverage, we ensure coverage for everybody. There's been no universal system modeled after the Obama or the model that Vinny's talking about or the Massachusetts. None of them have provided universal coverage. None of them worked. None of these piecemeal attempts have gotten to the goals. And so you've got to confront the issue to really get to the goals, and that's a hard thing to do, but it's going to have to be done. I don't see this thing passing. The more and more at the facts come out, the less likely it's going to pass. You're seeing talk now about employers being mandated to cover their employees at a time when there's a recession. You're talking about workers now being potentially taxed on their health care benefits. The mandate that everyone has to buy insurance, whether they want it or not. On issue after issue, the public options being played with. On issue after issue, you're seeing this thing fall apart. There's news reports of business groups now starting to leave and move to the Republican side. I think as the facts come out, this is not going to be likely. And when it fails, single payer is the obvious solution. Medicare for all. We already have done it. It's the uniquely American model, and it's the model that will work most effectively.
Vinny?
One thing I want to emphasize here is that we should never make the perfect the enemy of the good. And I've seen situations where single-payer advocates will actually testify against Medicaid expansion. And to me, that's just unacceptable. That if you have a goal out there, and we have single-payer advocates who are part of our coalition, that's their ultimate goal, but they very much support measures that can work while in their view, we're achieving this broader goal. So I encourage single-payer advocates to help us achieve what can be achieved. There's a great guy who was head of the Healthcare for All in Massachusetts, who's now a top aide to Senator Kennedy, who told a story about how he spent 10 years pushing for single-payer and counted the number of people he helped get insured, and it was zero. Then he became more interested in things that could work and spent another 10 years working on that, and the number of people he got health insurance for was 400,000 or 500,000. And I think that story illustrates the importance of figuring out how we can make things happen now. And our plan is one that can do that, that can build on the successes of the last couple of years. Let me describe what we do.
Wait, before you go to your thing, please respond to that Massachusetts thing. The reality is that we've tried that kind of approach in about a half dozen states. Massachusetts is in the early phases of it. And what you see in those states where I've tried it is a short-term drop in the uninsured, but then it goes right back up again. And the costs don't get controlled. All the problems remain. What you're doing as far as the perfect being the enemy of the good, the good that you're putting forward is actually strengthening the problem. It's strengthening the insurance industry that's causing the root cause of the problem. You're not weakening the problem.
You're actually
making the insurance industry wealthier.
What we're trying to
do is get
people health care. And we shouldn't put bashing insurance companies above giving people health care. In Massachusetts, it's the first time the state has done all the things Massachusetts has done. No other state has done that. And they have reduced the number of percentage of uninsured from 13% to 3%. And I know there are issues, and they're trying to work those out. But that's significant progress. And we think we could do the same here in Maryland.
Yeah, and how did we end up?
Kevin, I need to finish my thought.
How they paying for that? They're taking money out of the public hospitals.
Kevin, I need to finish my thought. We have a plan that addresses a lot of the concerns you legitimately raise about insurance companies by creating a pool where the pool will make sure that there isn't excessive administrative overhead and profits going to insurance companies, not allowing them to deny people health care for pre-existing conditions, and making sure that everyone is treated fairly. And we also have the state taking on the catastrophic coverage, which will reduce premiums and make sure people can get the health care they need. We have a plan that makes sense, that builds on what Massachusetts does and does it even better.
No, go ahead. Then I'm going to open the phones here.
I mean, the Massachusetts plan, I mean, we'll see how long it's in the early phases. So, it's, as I said, when you put these plans in place, there's an immediate positive step, but then in a very short time, it reverses. Washington, for example, today is kicking people off their rolls by raising the rates on the public option. And so you're seeing actually people being pushed out of insurance now years after that gets. So it's going to we'll see how it plays. And how Massachusetts is paying for this, which has actually gotten more expensive rather than less expensive, is they're taking money out of the public health system. The public hospitals, for example, are being taking money out of their budgets to pay for this health care plan. So we'll see how Massachusetts works. I think it's too early to judge it.
No state has done this before.
Well, we know six states have tried very similar
the elements of Massachusetts.
None of them have worked.
No.
They
have not done this. And we got to give them credit for going from 13% uninsured to 3%.
We'll see how long it lasts.
We hope it lasts. You may hope it doesn't last.
No, I'm looking at the history of the six other states that have tried this.
Do you hope it lasts?
Of course, the history is it's not going to.
We're agreed.
The history is it's not going to.
But that's
so we're not
never, no state has
and
ever
you know
done
that too.
That,
every state that's tried this had the same result.
No state has done this before.
Every state that's tried something similar has had a short-term effect that in the end didn't work.
What I know about Massachusetts is that it has gone from 10, 11, 12%, whatever you say it is, down to almost 2.6% uninsured.
Right.
But the other side of it is that healthcare costs in Massachusetts have grown faster than most other states in the union. And there's still 200,000 people in Massachusetts who are not insured. We'll see how it plays out.
There were limits to what Massachusetts did, and one of the things they didn't do properly, which we address in our plan, they did a lot of great things, but they didn't have enough of a solid funding mechanism. That's why
what is the funding mechanism?
We include an alcohol tax, a tobacco tax, which are public health measures which will save lots of kids from smoking and alcohol abuse, and which will, and we also have a 2% payroll tax. And together, those measures will keep our plan funded way out into the out years.
Well, let me do this. We're on the phones. A lot of interesting people are going to call in here and talk about this from all over the state and into Pennsylvania. So let's talk to them at 410-319-8888. Both the people of our, in our program here today, Kevin Zeis and Vinnie DeMarco, have been fighting for health care for every citizen in the state of Maryland and in this country. Very different views. Kevin believes that single payer is the only way we should go as a society, the only way it's going to work. And Vinnie thinks that's politically unrealistic, not putting words in anybody's mouth, and that we have to ensure health care for all in a different way. What are your thoughts about how we get to health care for all? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Sheldon in Pikesville, you're the first caller on the air. You're on the air.
Yes. I think we need to look no further than the collapse of the automobile industry to see that the insurance model of funding health care is no longer viable. Prior to the collapse of the auto industry, GM and the union had agreed that the union would administer the retiree health plan and GM would fund it with money. Now, as a result of the collapse of the industry, GM is largely going to fund it with GM stock, which is essentially worthless stock. Now, even in the best of times, I don't know how many healthcare providers would accept GM stock as payment for services, or how many insurance companies would accept GM stock as payment for premiums. The model does not work anymore, and I find it ironic that it is the perpetuation of the insurance model of funding health care that is held out as the realistic model instead of single payer, which would be based on general taxation to cover everyone. The model does not work anymore, and propping it up is merely like the bailout of the financial industry, a way of funneling taxpayer money to investors in insurance companies. It's not going to improve the quality of health care or bring down the costs of health care. And the issue is health care, not insurance.
Yes, the issue is health care. The issue is health care, and Sheldon, thanks for calling. Look, we have a plan that will work, that will reduce insurance company profits, and that will make sure everybody has quality, affordable health care and everybody's covered. And it will work in Maryland, and I think a similar plan would work nationally. And if you are a single-payer advocate who says, unless we have single-payer, we're not going to do anything, the result is going to be nothing. And the result is going to be people not getting health care, which is, I believe, an unacceptable position. And I think that the plan that we have put together, that the Hopkins people at School of Public Health and University of Maryland have put together, is a smart, economically sound way to bring people together and achieve quality, affordable health care, and at the same time reducing the excesses of the insurance companies.
I think, you know, Sheldon has it right in his call. I appreciate him calling. He has it right. It's a question of what can work, and it's obvious right now that the insurance-based model, the for-profit insurance-based model, is not working. So the perfect being the enemy of the good, the reality is the choice is not the perfect or the good here. The choice right now, we're talking about right now, is a failed approach. It's an approach that has not worked where it's been tried anywhere in the country. It's an approach that has not worked for the United States for the last, you know, recent decades. And we know that single payer does work. We know that taking out that middleman that sucks up so much resources, that causes so much bureaucracy, that's filled with waste, fraud, and abuse, with million-dollar salaries for a whole levels of executives, getting rid of that waste is what will make insurance makes healthcare affordable for all. That is the good approach. I'm on the position that passing the plan that's being talked about by Senator Baucus will do more harm than good.
Well, look, and tell that to the people who get insurance. Tell that that's easy for you to say who have insurance, but tell that to the people who
don't
would be insured.
Don't assume me. My health situation is.
If someone who has insurance, it's easy for them to say we want single payer or nothing. But tell that to someone the 40,000 people who got health care under our Medicaid expansion now would not have insurance if we didn't get that Medicaid. And if you're saying we can't do this Medicaid expansion until we get single payer, you're telling these 40,000
people. No, I'm in favor of Medicaid expansion. I'm in favor of Medicare expansion. In fact, that should be the model. Medicare expansion for all. That is the solution. It's very simple.
You favored our proposal to go from 40% of Medicaid to 160% of
Medicare for all.
But do you favor?
I favor expansion.
But
Medicaid
do you favor an incremental Medicaid approach expansion to cover more people?
If you're going to take an incremental approach to Medicaid and Medicare, I support that. What I don't support is funding the insurance industry.
Well,
I don't
support
funding money to the insurance industry.
Let me do this.
That's important that there's an agreement here.
I don't want more tax dollars to the insurance industry.
And let me just say that there are single payer advocates who oppose Medicaid expansion, and like Margaret Flowers, but I'm glad Kevin agrees that Medicaid expansion is a good thing and that we should keep doing that. That's good. That's important.
We have to take a short break. Is it time for our break? And we'll take that. And let me just encourage John from Chestertown County, Pennsylvania, and Matt from Severna Park, and Carol from Leonardtown all to hold on. We're going to come back to your calls 1-2-3. As we come back from this break, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. Over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We're back with Kevin Zietz and Vinny DeMarco in just 1 minute, and go right to the phones to Pennsylvania when we return. Welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking about how do we get to health care for all, universal coverage here in Maryland and around the country. We're talking with Vincent DeMarco, who is director of the Maryland Health Care for All Coalition, Kevin Zietz, director of ProsperityAgenda.us. And Kevin is a single-payer advocate, and Vinny DeMarco is approached that...
is a multi-payer advocate.
I'm an advocate of health care for all. Quality, affordable health care.
We're all for that.
Quality,
that,
affordable health care for all.
We're
that's
all
what
that.
I'm an advocate
that,
for.
That one we're all for, Vinny. But good. You're a multi-payer insurance
I'm glad
advocate.
We agree.
I'm an anti-insurance advocate.
I'm for doing it right.
Yeah, me too. That's why you're in the insurance industry.
410-319-8888 is number here. What do you think? Let's go right to the phones that I promised I would. John in Chestertown, Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
It's Chester County, Pennsylvania. But
Chester County, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Not a problem. I think that Mr. DeMarco may be using the term realistic as a euphemism for what is politically acceptable or desirable, a politically acceptable compromise when no such compromise is necessary. President Obama knew back when he was in the Illinois legislature that single payer was the way to go. But the thing that stood in the way was that we needed a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate. We've got all those. Therefore, there is nothing in the way. And no matter how you look at the polls, the nuance of the polls comes down clearly in favor of single payer, and it doesn't come down in favor of, I want to keep what I have through my employer because a lot of people know that they may lose what they have with their employer any day now. So I'm really, when I hear this, people talk about realistic, I know I'm hearing somebody who's playing politics. And when I hear somebody saying, I'm for health care coverage for all, what they're really saying is they want health care insurance for all as opposed to really health care coverage for all. So I agree with Mr. Zietz. What we need is a single-payer system. If we even look at the costs that the United States pays per capita versus Canada, France, we're paying over $5,000, in fact, closer to $6,000 now per capita, whereas in Canada, with single-payer, they're paying around $3,000, which is directly half of this. And to keep the cause, the root cause of the healthcare problem in the United States, and what makes us ranked 37th in the world in terms of healthcare quality are the healthcare insurance companies. To keep them as part of the solution to a problem, to suggest that anyone wants to keep the major cause of a problem as part of the solution to the problem is patently ridiculous. It's time to stop playing politics. Even Mr. Baca said this morning, I believe, to Senator Sanders, What happened? Didn't you get the memo? The reason that there were no single-payer representatives at the table was that Barack Obama wants a victory. He's more interested in a political victory. That's what the Democrats seem to be interested in, a political victory, as opposed to a real health care victory for the people in the United States.
Well, look,
Vinnie DeMarco.
One of the things single-payer advocates, I think, don't understand is that there are millions and millions of Americans who are very satisfied with their health insurance plans. We conducted a poll in 1999. 85% of the people who had health insurance said they were satisfied with their insurance. And let me read to you a poll we just conducted a couple weeks ago from Slinda Lake. Let me read the question and the answer. Which of the following two approaches to providing health care coverage do you prefer? An approach that would guarantee affordable health insurance coverage for every Marylander with a choice of health care plans that cover all necessary medical services paid for by employers and individuals on a sliding scale, or a single government-financed health insurance plan for all Marylanders financed by tax dollars that would pay private health care providers for a comprehensive set of medical services. That was the question asked, and it was 64% for the first, which is like our plan, and 18% for a single-payer type plan. And that reflects that millions and millions of Marylanders and Americans would object strongly to being taken off the health insurance they have.
That reflects,
a
Democratic
culture. Can I finish, please, Kevin? We are trying to accomplish health care for all in a way that's acceptable to the American people, and I think we're going to do it.
I think what the caller was talking about when he's talking about political feasibility and the euphemism was code word for corruption. When you look at where the money goes in Congress and who pays it, that's why we're getting this kind of crummy multi-payer plan that's going to be a subsidy to the insurance industry. The kind of question that, you know, it's very hard to judge this Slinda Lake poll based on one question, especially since she's such a Democratic pollster and a supporter of the multi-payer options. It's hard to trust without seeing the whole poll. That poll could be the last of 20 minutes of conversation that you're having with somebody and you get to that final question. Who knows? I mean, taken out of context, there's lots of polls that show the opposite. I was laughing when you were telling that because I was thinking of this town hall meeting that was held in Montana. Where Max Baucus is from. 250 people were there, and the Baucus person was making the point that Vinny was making, that people want to keep their insurance. People like their insurance. Those who have it want to keep it. And so some of the audience said, who here in this audience likes their insurance? You know, five people raised their hand. We don't like our insurance. We like our doctors. We want to have our coverage. We want to have our choices. When people understand that you get more choice from a single-payer system than you do from a multi-payer system, because you don't have the insurance industry telling you, here's your doctor list, here's your hospital list, here's your health provider list. No, you get full choice with single-payer. When people understand that, they don't care if they have Blue Cross or Blue Shield or Kaiser. That's not the issue. The issue is, can you go to your doctor or not when you need to? And that's what people really want. So I think the choice issue actually favors the single-payer advocates. Unfortunately, the corruption issue favors the multi-payer advocates because the industry's in control. They're the ones behind closed doors, the senators. We're just fighting to get at the table.
If Mr. Zeis would talk to the people of Maryland like we did over the last
few
years.
I talk to people of Maryland all the time. Don't insult me. You know, you start out with your last comment started, what the single payer people don't understand. Then you say, if Mr. Zeis would talk to... I talk to people, I understand.
Kevin, can I finish?
Don't insult me.
I'm not trying to insult you. You're not trying, but you're doing it. Kevin, I'm just trying to say that we went through a process of town hall meetings all around the state, talking to employers, unions, community groups, faith groups, and what we found was overwhelming support for quality, affordable health care for all Marylanders, but a desire to keep the plans they have. And that's why President Obama is pushing the kind of plan he is, and we should, instead of dividing ourselves, be uniting behind doing that.
Let me open the phones again. There's a lot of interesting callers here, different positions they're taking in this discussion, cool, to raise to all of us here. I'm talking to Vinnie DeMarco and Kevin Zeis on how do we get to full coverage for every citizen in our country. 410-319-8888. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, pardon me. Matt and Severna Park, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Great show.
Thank you.
I've got two kind of questions for Kevin. First and foremost, I can realize that he wants to basically destroy the insurance, you know, system in the United States. But does he have any idea how many insurance industry jobs Americans have? And are you really advocating destroying those jobs in this current economy? And two, why pursue only single payer when the political reality is zero? And I disagree with the last caller. There are not votes to pass single payer. And if you really think that, you're absolutely crazy. So why should we pursue this ridiculous strategy when we could significantly reform the system now and build upon successes in the future?
Well, political reality. Great questions. Thank you for those questions. Political reality is a very important thing to to keep in mind, because if we always adapted what was politically realistic, women wouldn't be voting. And believe me, women are voting. Blacks wouldn't be drinking at any water fountain they want to drink at, but they're drinking anywhere they want to drink. Gays wouldn't be getting married. Political reality changes, and it's our job to advocate as citizens. It's our job to advocate for what we really want, not to accept what's politically realistic, because politically realistic always means the status quo wins. And that's what we're seeing in this multi-payer approach. Protect the status quo, find some way to keep the status quo happy. As far as the jobs issue goes, yes, everyone's concerned about that. In fact, the single-payer bill, H.R. 676, that's been supporting, that has like 75 co-sponsors in the House. That bill, in fact, has a provision in it that allows for the job training of people in the insurance industry, as well as keeping their incomes during that transition period. So, of course, that's something we recognize. Transitions are always difficult, but they have to happen. In fact, those same kind of arguments that were being made by the caller about the difficulty of the transition were made when Medicare was adopted in the 1960s. The insurance companies were all saying the same kind of thing. We'll lose jobs. We're going to, you know, people want their insurance, blah, blah, blah. But if a couple years after Medicare was in place, that was behind us. And this will be behind us as well. And we'll look back at this. If we make this change to single payer, we'll look back at this as one of the greatest moments in American history where we really provided health care to all Americans in a way that could be affordable. We look back at it as a time when we challenged the status quo interest to really put in place what Americans wanted, which is complete choice and complete access to their medical services. And we'll look back at that and say, bravo. We look back at this in a couple of years, we're going to say, we got our work to do because it didn't solve the problem.
We have a number of people calling from all around the state that are holding on.
Just real quick, first of all, I want to say I am thrilled that single-payer advocates, Margaret Flowers, et cetera, are getting hearings before Congress. They should get a hearings. It was ridiculous not to allow hearings or be part of the discussion. That is great. And I am also – the most important thing for me in this hour was Kevin's statement that he supports incremental Medicaid expansion. That is great, and that is significant because Margaret Flowers testified against Medicaid expansion. And a single-payer advocate who supports Medicaid expansion, to me, is part of the discussion, and that's great. And that means we can go forward.
I'd like to see the details of that Medicaid expansion. I probably would agree with Margaret more than you from what I've heard so far.
It was a straight Medicaid expansion.
If someone's going to fund the insurance industry, I'll be against it.
It was a straight Medicaid expansion that she opposed.
410-319-8888. Carol in Leonardtown, Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Steiner. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Mr. DeMarco, you talk about taxation options for funding a public-private option. I don't have any objection to taxation to provide health care for more people who are currently uninsured. What I object to is having 31% of those taxes go to bureaucracy and profit for the private insurance industry. I call that a bailout.
Well, that's a good question, and that's why our plan creates this health insurance pool, which would bring businesses under 100 employees and individuals together in a pool that would negotiate for these prices and dramatically reduce the overhead on premiums. Right now, if you're a small business, you spend around 20-30% of your premium on overhead. If you're a large business like Safeway, that's 8 or 9%. Under our plan, all these small businesses would have that same economic power, and the overhead on their premiums will go down to around 8 or 9% also, and that would reduce the problem you address.
Well,
so we understand these problems.
It doesn't address the problem even. She's talking about 31% of waste and bureaucracy that's created by massive numbers of insurance companies that are trying to seek a profit and creating all sorts of barriers to people getting health care in order to keep their profit. She's talking about 31%, which includes all those hospitals with billing agents and gigantic billing departments. The doctors obviously we're stuck with 20% of overhead. That's what she's talking about. It's great to pool people, but if you pool people in one pool, then you can negotiate. We pay double what they pay in Canada for the same drugs because we can't negotiate. We're also dispersed with these multiple insurance agents. The only way to get real negotiation and reduce prices is to get rid of that massive bureaucracy of waste.
And we do that substantially with our pool and address this problem.
Before we go back to the phones, and Carol, thanks for holding on from Leonardtown. I'm glad you can listen to us down there. Before we go to the next caller, who's Brooke, let me read an email that came in from Margaret, who challenges Vinny on Massachusetts. Let me read this out. How many people in Massachusetts remain uninsured? Many state politicians are trumpeting the results of a recent phone survey by the Urban Institute that was on the website, the Massachusetts state website, which found only 2.6 respondents, which I said earlier, to be uninsured by mid-2008. However, despite considerable efforts, the survey reached few non-English-speaking households, few households lacking landline phones. two demographic groups with high rates of uninsurance. Surveys using more rigorous methods have yielded higher estimates of the number of state residents who remain uninsured. In March 2008, the U.S. Census Bureau conducted its annual door-to-door survey using a group of interviewers representing every major language group. Households were asked about their insurance in the previous year. 5.4% of the people said they were uninsured.
And the bizarre thing about that 2.6 number is when they couldn't reach somebody, they assumed they had insurance.
Well,
it's a really a very inflated figure.
Well, look, to me, going from 13% uninsured to 5.4 is also substantial progress. I mean, it's not as good, but that's substantial progress. And if we could accomplish that, that's great. That's a lot of people getting health care.
As I said, every state that's tried that had the same result, but it was always temporary.
No state has done anything like what Massachusetts
did.
They've done different pieces of it, but no one has put it together like this.
We'll see.
And we're going to take that a step further and do it even better.
We'll see.
Here in Maryland, sure.
Yes. We build on that to make it even better.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on the future of health care in America. Which way should we go? How do we get to universal health care coverage for every citizen? 410-319-8888. Brooke in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. As I've been listening, I've been jotting down notes because so many things have been striking me. But first of all, I don't hear that Vinny DeMarco is pro-insurance company. I hear that he wants to rein in insurance companies by regulating them. And just as that gentleman caller had said about the automobile industry, when Wall Street really took a hit, we didn't exclude them from the process. We reined them in to say, well, this is what's going to happen. CEOs are going to be making less money, and these are the things we expect if you're going to be getting money. So I don't think it's unrealistic to have insurance companies at the table, but I think it is very realistic to have them regulated, which is what it sounds like Mr. DeMarco wants to do. And also, it sounds like the single-payer people think that this is going to be the savior of everything, but even looking at places like Sweden, where now they're contending with cost as people are getting older and how to control cost, looking over the healthcare for all plan, that's something that's already been injected into there as well. And it is about having access to doctors, but it's also about public health. A lot of these countries are healthier than the United States because they also feed into public health, which, looking over this plan now, I'm seeing that that's also a part of the healthcare for all plan. So it's not really necessarily about politics, which I've heard people giving Mr. DeMarco a hard time about. It's about getting people coverage and what that's going to take. So maybe President Obama now realizes that this is the first step, and I don't think that by any means anyone's saying that this is the last step, but I think that it's a good place to start, and I think that that's pretty much what I have to say. So thank you for taking my call.
You said a lot, Brooke. I'm glad you held on. Thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thank you, Brooke.
Very complex thinking. I appreciate
it. Good thinking.
So what's coming first? She was kind of saying, I think, more critical of your position. Why don't you start, Kevin, then go over to Vinny?
I'm not confident that we're going to see much regulation of the insurance industry in this bill. In fact, the papers that Senator Baucus has put out have shown pretty little effort to put any pressure on the insurance industry. So I'm not confident about that. What I have seen more of is effort to really curtail the public option so that really can't compete with the insurance industry and try to pull their costs down. So, looking at the reality of what's happening on the ground, I just don't see what Brooke is saying is happening. I see the insurance industry dominating this fight. They're in control of the legislature. They're meeting behind doors with Baucus and all to put in place what they want. And they're the ones driving this policy. This is a pro-insurance model. And I don't see Vinny DeMarco as a challenger of the insurance industry at all. I see him as someone kind of, is trying to work with them and keep them involved and keep them alive. And every state that's tried the Massachusetts-like models, the people who've won the most have been the insurance industry.
Well, let me just say again, no state has ever tried a Massachusetts-type model. But Kevin, Brooke was not talking about the Baucus plan. She was talking about our plan. And I urge you to look at it. It's at healthcareforall.com. As she points out, our plan does have a lot of serious, substantial insurance company regulation, which goes a long way to addressing their excesses and problems. And the other point Brooke makes is, and this is very important, costs have more to do than insurance company profits. I mean, that's part of it. We've got to deal with it. But there are other issues in costs. And our plan is one of the only plans I've seen that really addresses some of the broader factors that are pushing healthcare costs off, keeping people healthy, reducing smoking, drinking to excess, reducing obesity, reducing other healthcare cost drivers, and encouraging people to use quality evidence-based healthcare. The data is clear that if people use processes and procedures, no matter what kind of insurance you have, that are not evidence-based, that drives up costs. So our plan has higher copays if you use non-evidence-based healthcare and lower copays if you use evidence-based healthcare, and that will keep people healthier and keep healthcare costs down. So this isn't just about insurance company profits, insurance company this. This is our broader healthcare issues, which our plan addresses.
I think that's something that we both agree on, that there are broader issues. And I'll just point out on the smoking issue that one of the big investments that the insurance company is making is in the tobacco industry. And that came out just recently, but it was also came out 10 years ago. And they didn't change their behavior. They're still supporting the tobacco industry. So those are the kind of people you're allied with in this multi-payer approach that's being taken.
I'm allied with the people of Maryland.
One other thing that can be controlled by single payer that can't be controlled by a multi-payer option is the problem of medical malpractice. Because if you have a single payer system where people can get access to health care, if there's a bad outcome, they can get health care, and that reduces the problem of malpractice. Another driver.
410-319-8880. One of the things we didn't talk about here, too, was the overall costs of health care.
Right.
Why it's so expensive in America, insurance companies included, but beyond insurance companies, and how any of these systems really address. Well, let me ask that question.
That's exactly what I just said.
How do either one of these systems address the rocketing costs, whether it's pharmaceuticals, healthcare, the insurance industry, and all the other factors that raise the cost?
And Mark, we address that in our plan. Beyond who pay, insurance companies or private plan, public plan, our plan has a lot in it dealing with what you're talking about, reducing smoking, reducing alcohol and drug abuse, reducing obesity, and let me say it again, encouraging people to use quality evidence-based healthcare by having lower copays for that and higher copays if something is not evidence-based. And that is something which is an innovative thing in our plan which will help keep costs down. So I agree with you.
The key thing on single payer that the advantage that multi-payer plans don't have is you have, by having one payer, you develop a national health plan that actually deals with a whole range of issues. Single payer is the financing arm. But you also, through that, because you have one payer, you can negotiate more aggressively with the cost of pharmaceutical drugs, which, as I mentioned earlier, are much higher in the United States than they are anywhere else in the world because we have this system where you can't fight the pharmaceutical industry. Or the idea of the expensive equipment that's in some cities you have multiple hospitals with the same equipment, and in order to pay for that equipment, they often use the procedures that aren't even necessary.
But either plan really
single payer helps because you have one person, one funder who can be aware of all the has a vision of everything, as opposed to this broken up system where you can't really track what's going on. So you can and there's a Harvard researcher who points out that with a single payer system you could find hundreds of millions of dollars in fraud that you can't find this in this complex multi system. So the single payer system will do all these things that the multi payer system cannot do.
410-319-8888. Linda in Annapolis, you're on the air.
I just like both gentlemen to tell me how would their plan affect the entire country economically? How do they see single payer versus the other plan impacting our terrible economic situation?
That's great question.
Well, we have about 90 seconds left for HV to answer that question. Both of you.
Basically, if we don't control health care costs, we can't control deficits. I think everyone agrees that we have to get health care costs under control. That's a top priority. And we know that single payer is the most cost effective of the options. We can't control through a multi payer system. It's never worked.
Our plan is designed to make health care affordable. And that's why over 250 small and large medium businesses have endorsed it. The Greater Baltimore Black Chamber of Commerce and Arundel Black Chamber of Commerce, they know that our plan will make healthcare more affordable for businesses, and that's why we're going to succeed.
But even the Massachusetts plan that you tout has not controlled costs.
They've reduced
and
costs
that's the bigger issue.
They've reduced costs within the pool, and
we've
got to figure out
costs for the overall economy.
We have to figure out
that's
a better way to
talking
do.
About well, is how we can't control our economy.
Our plan is better than the Massachusetts plan, as good as that is.
Clearly, this is a very critical subject, and our listeners are really want to be engaged in this debate.
They do.
I appreciate both Linda Markham and Kevin Zins for being here today. And bring this to the people and all our listeners across our tri-state area. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Happy to do it.
Good to have you here. Stay with us, folks. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite gets on board our transportation future with stories on how electric cars could change the city, the battle for the streets between drivers and bicyclists, and a possible second act for the great American streetcar. Urbanite is available at over 700 locations, region-wide, and online at urbanitebaltimore.com. Come right back. When we do come back, we're going to talk to somebody who wrote a very interesting op-ed in the New York Times about Obama's bailout plan and the economy, and then hear from a very interesting artist who's involved at MICA and also with sustainability issues. Fascinating. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go away.